So hi, I'm Tom Evans, and welcome to another Uber Standing. This is the fifth in this series of what might be 23 or even more. And I'm delighted today to have Louisa Tanner-Manson with me, the intuitive business astrologer. Welcome, Louisa.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on your show today.
Real pleasure on my part. Now, we set up this conversation. I record them a bit in advance to give me time to edit them. We set this conversation up a month or two back. We said, as soon as you knew I was doing Uber Standings, you decided that I wanted to do one, which is great. We're recording it on the 12th of May. And the next slot, as you know, I release a bit of content on the moon phase. There are four bits of content every moon orbit, one on the new moon, which is serialization of the audiobook of The Path of Overstanding, Path to Overstanding. Mm-hmm. On the first quarter, I do a meditation on the key. So this moon is on the Hierophant, which is about connecting. And mm-hmm. I've got some amazing stuff about connecting with the divine in there. On the full moon, I record a track, an ambient track based on the key, which is inspired by the key. And then on the third quarter, the Uber Standing comes out. And it just so happens that this track is going to go live, not only on the third quarter, but on the 21st of June, which is
the solstice.
So, as you know about all these things cosmic, is that just a coincidence, or is there any significance to it?
Ooh, well, I mean, we've known each other a long time, haven't we? And I think we can both agree that there are no real coincidences, are there? You know, there's always, it always seems that something is connecting us up. And I really like the time of the solstices, because I'm born actually around the winter solstice. And one of the things that I notice about people's birth charts and their inner programming, their inner connectedness is that their life tends to follow and flow around their own unique programming, i.e. about their birth chart. And so lots of things happen to me around the time of the solstices and also the equinoxes, because they're all connected. And so I don't think it's a surprise that you've invited me to talk for a chat that's going to be released around the time of the solstice at all. I've got solstice energy all over my chart. I think it's really, really apt, Tom. It's perfect. Yeah, I love it. And we're talking about consciousness, aren't we? In terms,
yeah, because obviously astrology and astronomy, they're not bedfellows exactly, are they? I think they don't exactly diverge. They sort of follow. I mean, before astronomy and cosmology was formed, astrology was astronomy. Then these,
yeah, it was all together for many years.
Yeah. But now it's diverged and maybe running in parallel. And one of the things that the astronomer will say, well, the gravitational pull of a planet like Pluto or one of the small asteroids on Earth is infinitesimally small. It can't affect things on the planet. But as you know, it's known that we have a collective consciousness around planet Earth called the noosphere. People like Teilhard de Chardin and James Lovelock would talk about that with Gaia theory. And so it follows then that every other planet also has a consciousness field. And do you think that it's the consciousness field rather than any sort of gravitational pull that's making the heavens, the cosmos, influences things down on Earth?
That's a great question. I've got so many thoughts about this, Tom. I really do, because I think about the consciousness field around everything around me. You know, as a child, I saw auras around trees. I would feel the auric fields around my pets and, you know, my loved ones. And so I've always been very switched on to the idea of a consciousness field around every living being. And I do see the planets as being beings. You know, they do have a consciousness. I also am a big fan of homeopathy, and I've been using it under the direction of quite a few different homeopaths, actually, who are very well trained and very well versed. It's a bit like, you know, you're talking about the difficulty between astronomers and astrologers. I think that's a little bit like doctors and homeopaths. So doctors are saying, oh, there's nothing in that remedy because, you know, there can't be anything in it. Therefore, it can't work. And yet the homeopath knows that the medicine that it's going to give has the vibrational essence or the consciousness. It's very similar, actually, astrology and homeopathy. So, for instance, with homeopathy, you might be able to buy something at your local health food shop of a 6C or a 30C potency, which are considered really low potencies. And they've got a little bit of it's got more of the energetic field of the tablet in it than one of the stronger potencies. But their impact is milder on your energetic system. And so I think the closer the planet is to us, i.e. the stronger its gravitational force might be on us, it does have an impact, but it's not necessarily a dramatic or a permanent impact. If you think about the moon cycles, lots of people get affected by the moon cycles, and they go every 28, 29 days. You know, you'll have the full moon, the new moon, and the two quarters every single time. You know, and we've got 13 of those cycles every year. And so lots of people get affected by the moon, but that moon cycle, when it affects you, when it connects to something in your chart, because it moves so fast, its effect is, you know, it comes on quite quickly and then it goes away quite quickly. You know, so it's a fleeting effect. And it's the same with the closer planets to us. But the further on a planet is away from the sun, the slower it moves. So for instance, Pluto, which is, it has been deregulated out of the solar system and then added back in. Poor old Pluto, no wonder it's got a grudge. Pluto is right at the edge of the solar system. And obviously, you know, we actually know that there are other bodies of consciousness further on from Pluto as well. And lots of astrologers do use those, but Pluto moves so slowly. It takes 258 years approximately to go around the whole zodiac belt. And so when Pluto is coming into alignment with something in your chart, its effect is very pronounced. Wow. And you have a very dramatic 6 months followed by a fairly difficult 2 years, you know, either side of the 6 months, and you'll even feel it coming into play. So for instance, when there's things like divorces, bankruptcies, a very particular and painful death, or, you know, Pluto is about the death of the ego, which is a huge, huge subject. And so if I was to go back and say, what is the Pluto version of homeopathy? You'd be given maybe a 200C potency of a homeopathic medicine, and it's got virtually if it's say phosphorus, it will have absolutely zero phosphorus in it, but it's got a very pure and very faint energy of phosphorus in it, a bit like Pluto is miles away at the far end of the solar system. You know, how can it possibly reach us? How can its gravity possibly have an effect? And yet it has a stronger effect on us. And so like the 200C potencies that homeopaths use are the ones that create dramatic and lasting change. They're the ones that give us our breakthroughs. And so, yeah, I can see why doctors would get frustrated with homeopaths and why astronomers would get frustrated with astrologers. But once you've studied these cycles and you've worked with clients and you hear about what's going on, the proof is in the pudding, I would say. You know, well, once you've had one of those Pluto things happen, you know, you won't doubt it.
Well, I've got to say that, well, one is I'm finding that, you know, working to the moon phase, which, you know, I've done for many years, and I produced a whole project to it last year for Sylvain's assertions. And now I'm going one stage further and doing it over a period of 2 years. And at first, that's majorly daunting, but I'm into my fifth moon, and the stuff just keeps flying in. You know, literally the content I need comes in, and I seem to generate the time to do it all. But in April, I did my first Insight Timer workshop.
How did that go?
Oh, brilliant. Loved it. I loved it so much that I'm now going to do four a year on the two equinoxes and on the two solstices, which is amazing.
Fantastic.
So, and I'm doing one on the next one is on the autumn equinox on overstanding the tarot, which is going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. But on this attention management workshop, so I did the first, it was three parts. The first one was in extended me time, how you make time go a bit slower. Then the next is on inner mind time, how the gut and the heart work, and then on outer mind time. And obviously outer mind time is influenced by the spheres, by the cosmos. And it just came to me to look at the Saturn orbit, which I think is 29 years, isn't it?
Yeah. What were you just saying then? Inner time, outer time, and middle time?
So your extended, I've got these three time zones, extended me time, which is ENT, how you extend your own personal experience of time, inner mind time, which is IMT, and that's how the inner mind, the lower mind centers like the heart and the gut, they actually run ahead of time. And then outer mind time, which is OMT, is the super consciousness and the collective consciousness and all the cosmos running to all its different times.
Okay, well, that model fits in perfectly with the solar system.
Of course.
And is it all right to just quickly sort of transpose my model onto yours, if that's all right?
Please. Yeah.
So it's interesting that, you know, you have been working with the moon for so long. And like you said, each month it flows in, it flies in all the intel, all the knowledge, the ideas, and that you're able to do a quick turnaround on it. That's very moon-like because the moon works so fast. It works fast and it can work quite deeply, but, you know, just as you're experiencing the medicine of the moon, you're into the next phase of it. So it's always changing and it's, you know, it has an effect, but you don't really have time to sit down and analyze the effect because the next one's coming straight in. So it's that fast. And in astrology, we consider the personal planets, i.e. the ones that would be representative of your inner mind time.
Yeah.
We say the sun, the moon, Mercury, Venus, and Mars are the inner mind. And are the ones that have the personal effect. So the sun is about our ego. The moon is about our emotions and our behaviors. Mercury about our communication, how we speak, how we learn and how we share and also sell. It's very much about transactions. It's movement. Like Mercury moves very fast. And then we've got Venus, which is a bit slower, but it's about the love wave and the flow of generosity and reciprocity and kindness and compassion. And then we've got Mars. And so you've got the you've also got the very sort of personalized feminine and the masculine, you know, in humans, because we all have that side, no matter what our gender is, we all have, you know, a softer side and we all have a tougher side. And so you've got the Venus and Mars. So these are our personal ones. And they are the ones, you know, like when all of these planets are moving around our chart, they give us a little super shot of adrenaline sometimes from Mars, or we might get a bit of a love spell from Venus, and it lasts for a little while, but not so much that it drastically changes our lives. And then we've got Jupiter and Saturn, and I consider those to be the bridging planets. So they're further out from the sun, and they are in between the outer planets, which I'll talk about in a sec, which I think are your out of time planets. It's the super consciousness, it's the collective consciousness that everyone swims in. It's like the water that we swim in, but we've got these bridging planets in between that connect the wisdom of the outer with the wisdom of the inner and our personal. So Jupiter and Saturn, Jupiter's about how we expand our already, you know, we've already got our personal style, so Jupiter shows how we expand it beyond our conscious world. You know, how do we reach out of the bubble of our, you know, our boundaries and our childhood and our behaviors that come from that? So Jupiter shows where we sort of break through like the eggshell of safety and go into the big world. And then Saturn shows how we stabilize in the bigger world, you know, where we're interacting with other people.
This is genius stuff. Love it.
So that's your extended middle mind, isn't it? The bridging, you know, it shows how you extend. You might be extending through structures and laws and, you know, like, you know, Saturn's known as being a bit of a bugbear, the Saturn return that you've already mentioned at 29 years. You know, it shows us growing up. It shows responsibility. And of course, the personal planets just decide, you know, they talk to you about yourself. But, you know, every human here needs an interaction, and we grow and expand through interactions, and we don't really have responsibility until we have others in our lives. You know, whether that's an animal that you're responsible for, a pet, you know, the responsibility usually comes through our relationships. And so Jupiter through expansion and hope and optimism, and Saturn through rules and guidelines and practices, really shows us how we access that further stuff. And then out in the far parts of the solar system, we've got Uranus, Neptune and Pluto, and they are your outer time planets. You know, so they are connected to the collective consciousness. It shows all the trends, all the kind of consciousness of the planet. You know, every time a new planet, or and like one even further from Pluto, every time there's a new discovery in the solar system, in our astronomical world, it usually shows an advance in humanity. So for instance, around the time that Uranus was discovered, you know, we had and, you know, later Neptune and Pluto, we were going into a different age, you know, with science and with nuclear work and physics and things like that. You know, everything comes with a very big expansion. I suspect we are on the cusp of a very deep expansion. And I'm pretty sure that as that happens, we're going to be discovering a lot about the collective universal soup that we live in. I'm expecting something rather expansive and out of this world to occur very, very, very soon. Yeah.
Well, that's the missing dark energy. That's the dark energy and dark matter that the scientists can't work out what it is. And we know it's the consciousness field, don't we? The thing that connects everything, the eye field. Now, that's really interesting. So I want to share two things with you then, which is interesting. So on the third session in the attention management, I brought in cosmic natural time and the idea of working to the moon and the seasons and this sort of stuff. And because I think you told me this ages ago, but I didn't realize it, when I was 29, right?
Yeah.
That's when I got out of corporate and I formed my first business and I had my own staff. I had responsibilities. Mm. When I was 58, It's 58, they discovered me. Then I had a sort of responsibility as this. I didn't realize at the time. I thought I was a bloke just knocking out a few meditations, but I know
people. You're not.
Absolutely love this stuff, and a new responsibility came, which is just amazing. But it's amazing how these things affect you, but you only find out about them a bit later. So how does astrology, the study of the movement of the spheres and this sort of stuff, help us uberstand ourselves? Big question, I know. Sorry to line that one.
No, it's a great question, Tom. And it's one I would be you know, I should really consider a lot. how does it help us uberstand ourselves? I would say the first big bonus in looking at your birth chart is the understanding that you're part of a cycle. And when you know you're part of a cycle, you also learn that you're part of a cycle within cycles. So you start to learn that you fit in place somehow, like the inner workings of a mysterious clock with all these little cogs and wheels and things like that. You're an important part of that mechanism. We are literally part of the universe. You know, we are born in these cycles, and your birth chart describes a set of characteristics and tendencies, but it also suggests, as you learn about the planets, it also suggests divine timing for you, because, you know, some people are born with lots of planets in the same area. And so a lot of their life, they could be minding their own business, following their absolute bliss. And then all of a sudden, one of these big outer planets comes and is in the same area as all those planets were at the time, place and date of your birth. Because it moves so slowly and because you've got so many planets there, it's just going to impact them all in a really pretty strong way. I had pretty much a decade of Pluto going over my personal planets. He's gone over my ascendant. He's gone over most of my stuff, just not my moon, just because of the unique cycle that I was born into. And so I went through a very deep 10-year period just before meeting my husband, really. That's when it was coming to the end, actually. In fact, almost to the very day, the very last planet that Pluto touched before giving me a break was Venus, the planet of love. And it started this new pattern, which was this pattern of love, marriage and family. And I'm still in that pattern and Pluto's kind of moved away. But, you know, there are other people who are born, you know, with a very even spread of planets in their birth chart. And so when Pluto goes over one of those, it's not such a dramatic effect. We all have our unique patterns. And the more you realize you can learn about yourself, the deeper you can go. I mean, I'm always noticing, I've been studying this stuff really since I was about 12. I've always been reading about astrology and learning more. And then, you know, just the biggest study comes when you're working with actual real life clients, which I've been doing now for about 8 years. And it's always deepening. I'm always learning a new application for astrology because the patterns always bear out. Shockingly so. It's almost like I can't quite describe it really. I guess what I get from astrology is this absolute knowing that there is a divine energy behind it all. That I am part of and you are part of. To me, it just, I don't want to make it sound like a religion because it's beyond that. It's beyond the label of it. But there is a unifying principle that I really feel. And I think the astrological birth chart gives you a reference point to unravel it. And you can plan your life by it. I mean, you said something really interestingly the first time, or, you know, one of the earlier times when I gave you a reading, you said, what was it? I can't even remember what it is. It's such a brilliant thing that you said, Tom. It was something like, you can save time, money, and heartache, because you learn what you need to learn through astrology. So you don't necessarily know what you don't know, but with astrology, you get to see the bigger picture. You get to learn the things that you didn't know, but you needed to know to save you time, money, and effort and heartache. And I really appreciated you saying that to me because it really makes sense. You know, it often shows you where your blind spots are in a very powerful way. It's all there. It's all there to look at and to dive into.
Yeah, on a sort of financial basis, someone said to me once that millionaires don't use astrologists, but billionaires do.
Yeah, and trillionaires. Yeah, they really do. It's funny because I'm getting a nudge to look at financial markets and astrology again. I started a project about 5 years ago and I was mapping the ups and downs and comparing it to Bitcoin. And I've still got these books. I've just like hoiked them out of my bookshelves a few days ago, literally about the markets and the market changes. Why I'm thinking like that is because, you know, there are some really big changes coming up in this year, ones that I know are going to affect the markets. And I said to a client last week, everything's going to tank really soon because we've got Mercury going retrograde and Mercury is very much about the commerce. He brings in shorter changes in the stock exchange. We're in between the eclipse period. So we had our solar eclipse last week and we've got our lunar eclipse actually coming up in about 4 days' time. Or, you know, it's a 2-week eclipse period. So it's a little bit longer than a week ago. So we've got the eclipse season, we've got Mercury going retrograde, and then Jupiter's just changed signs. Anytime a planet moves from one sign to another, it triggers a very strong surge in energy. And then this week, you know, the markets have been really unstable. Everything seems to be tanking at the moment. But there's an even bigger change coming up around the end of July when Uranus, which is associated with online trading, and Uranus is also associated with cryptocurrency. Uranus is going to be in a conjunction with a North Node at the end of July, and that happens every 15 years. We've had some really big aspects this year and things are going to change, I'm pretty sure, with money. And you know, if you listen to, you know, what's in the media and kind of almost read between the lines, you know, there's lots of talk about getting rid of actual physical currency and lots of talk about having a one world currency and things like that. And I find that a little bit perturbing. because it's not the currency itself that's good or bad. It's not. It's just a medium of exchange and reciprocity. But it's who's doing the controlling of it. You know, is it going to be something that the people own, or is it something that will be used to beat us with? And I really don't know. But I think we're going to see some huge changes. Yeah, so... yeah, it really does affect the markets.
So you mentioned Uranus for 84 years, and you know, some of us might well get to reach our 85th orbit of the sun. Yes. Neptune's 165, and as you mentioned, Pluto's 248. Have the
I said 256, didn't I? That's combining, getting mixed up with Neptune.
Don't worry. I just wonder whether these two outer planets play across lives. You know, so you might come into the influence of one in a past life or a future life, and then it comes back and it skips a lifetime.
Yeah, quite possibly. It wouldn't surprise me. First of all, it's really funny that you mention a Uranus return 84 years, because in this last year, and this is one of the things that I was really shocked by, and I hadn't looked in advance, but our family, we lived with an 83-year-old woman last summer. And then we ended up moving out because it just wasn't working. And it really seemed that there was a breakdown between her and I, and I was really conscious of it and trying to, trying to do some, you know, work to, I don't know, foster trust and love and companionship and stuff. You know, our lofty ideals of trying to live in a three-generational family just didn't work. And then the funny thing is, Cole's mum came to live with us. She's just turned 84. And so we've had two goes of living with somebody on the cusp between, you know, of their 84-year cycle. Now, what I didn't check before either of them moved in was how their Uranus fitted into my chart. And it just so happens that the 6-month gap between one of their birthdays and the other one's birthdays, Uranus doesn't move very much, you know, in that time between when one was born and the other, only about 2 degrees. But where their Uranus was is on one of the most important parts of my chart. And it's about relationships. And the really strange thing is with Carl's mum, you know, I bent over backwards to look after my mother-in-law who'd, you know, had a knee replacement. I was giving her healing most days. It was a real joy to have her. And I had no idea that she was hatching a plan against me. And then all of a sudden, after 3 months, pretty much the same time that we lived with the other lady, she went crazy. And then just left while we were out one day. She just like packed up and went home. And so I had these, like, Uranus is the planet of breaks and sudden change and chaos and calamity. And it's a hard smack in the face. You know, Uranus has some great things. You know, it causes change, and it's the mother of invention. You know, it's also very much about the internet. It's about telepathy and mind waves and all sorts of electrical power, you know. And, you know, at a very low level, it's about shocks. It is also about youth. And so I was in a very sort of intimate relationship with two ladies. I'm in the flow of my youth, and they're coming to a stage of, I don't know, they both loved my husband. And it was very, very strange to have a two mother-in-law experiences, even though one wasn't his mum. It was almost like I was ostracized and black sheeped out of my own family. Very, very odd experience. And I wish I checked it astrologically, because I could have seen it coming, but I didn't think to check. my experience of living and having got to know them in the times that, you know, when our relationship seemed strong, both of them were reminiscing about times. Both of them were thinking about where their life was going. Both of them were in a lot of pain. And, you know, one of them's literally just passed away, not Carl's mum. So the other woman has passed away, but she was at the end of her life and she knew it. And my experience of both of them is at some level, there was this death wish, you know, because life isn't the way it has been, and they're moving into this new stage. I don't think I'd live with an 84-year-old again, unless, you know, their Uranus wasn't sort of interacting with a sensitive part of my chart. It's a very, very unique time for people because they are having to let go of a lot of things. And it could be a time of great liberation and freedom, because Uranus is also about freedom. From the chaos comes a release, a very big release. But it's about releasing youth and your ideas of youth and your ideas of how you're free. If you think you can only have freedom in your body, then you might end up quite resentful. But if you realize you can be free in your mind and connected, there are so many more opportunities. And I recognize that I'm saying that as a 47-year-old. So I have no idea what it's like to be in those bodies at that time. And hopefully, if I'm lucky, one day I'll have that same experience. Yeah. So I think it can be a really amazing time. And I think it can also be a time when it's your aging is quite shocking, and that youth are quite affronting. So,
wow.
Well, but I don't know if I answered your questions there, like Pluto and Neptune, it wouldn't surprise me if incarnations did do that.
Yeah. And obviously we haven't got that natural conscious experience of it, so we can't really know or prove it, but it's certainly thinking about it and exploring it might shed some light on it. But thanks for being so open and honest about that that personal experience.
I went into a big funk after. I've done a lot of healing work on it. You know, and one of the things I've realized is I am a people pleaser, and people pleasing energy around people who are not very happy with people is a terrible combination. And so I've been really looking quite critically at what makes me want to please people, and realizing that it's actually not a very helpful plan. It's not a very helpful pattern to have. And so it's been useful. You know, there's never any interaction that doesn't have a payoff for everyone.
Well, in terms of people, please, I've got to say you please me every 3 months, because I've got I have a reading every equinox and every solstice, which is great. And I should say that I know people don't big up the room, but your work is amazing.
Thank you so much.
And what's great, I use you not to help me out of remedial situations where, you know, I got stuck because I had this blissed and blessed life, but I use you to help me creatively. So I know you can help people that have got issues, because you can then point out where the issues are. Once you understand where the thing's coming from, then you can address it. But also using astrology generatively, as I do to create all this work and what have you, is amazing. But I just think that astrologers should be on the way back in, because there's so much to do. I might even introduce you to my merchant banker, who'd love some insights into.
Love to work with him, Tom. Please do. I'd love that. Do you know what? It's really interesting, because when I first started, really professionally, I mean, I was doing it as a hobby for years, as you know. But when I first started charging money and receiving money and doing it professionally, I had a lot of people that came in for first aid astrology, you know, like they've hurt themselves, they need a plaster, you know, they need an astrological plaster and to feel better and get back on with their day, you know, like some calamities come in and they just need a little bit of hand holding, a little bit of encouragement. But actually, over the last year or so, most of that has switched. So I'm working a lot more now with people that are already kind of set up to choose their way through life. So I'm really working with people to help them have more of the great stuff that's going on, and just to help navigate the choppy seas sometimes. So it's less first aid and it's more the map of life and goodness. And I love that. And I think, I also think that all of the clients that I'm involved in, I think we're all part of a collective upswell, I think, you know, because the people I work with help to raise me up. And the more I get raised up, the more I'm raising and rising with you all. So I do think it's a great collective to be in, being one of my clients. You know, if you're on the way up, then, you know, come and join us. And I can help you if you want a first aid thing, for sure, definitely. But I'm a lot more interested in helping people enjoy more of the good at the moment, I have to say. Because it feels so much better, doesn't it, Tom? I mean, you're wonderful. The way you work with astrology is fantastic. You know, it's there to sort of confirm really what you're already thinking.
And tune into it. I mean, I wrote a story as part of the Insertions project, 10 one, called IO. And IO is very like the number 10, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I literally tuned into the consciousness of IO, the moon, to find out what its role was. So what I'm going to do, it's in the in this archive, but I'll append it to the end of this interview so people don't have to can find it. And also I tuned into Holst the Planet Suites as well for one of the musical tracks, and I'll append that as well. So you can tune into these objects and extract information from them and allow that creativity to come through you. But just I'm going to throw a little gauntlet down at the very end of this. Before I do that, I'd just like you to share your URL where people can find you so they can not only get a bit of first aid but some of this amazing insight. Where would that be?
Well, if you want my sort of current thoughts on things, you can find me on Spotify. It's Feel Good Astrology on Spotify. My website is www.feelgoodastrology.com. And if you are interested in videos, then go to YouTube and look up my name. It's Louisa Tanner Munson. Yeah, and they're the three places where I am, I guess. I do have a little bit on Insight Timer, but I put little bits here and there, but really I'm on YouTube's the main place, I'd say.
Fantastic. Well, I also hope you're going to come back on the Uber Standing.
I'd love to.
As well, but let's run it from the we're getting more and more subscribers now on the path to overstanding. So let's, if you're listening to this and you would like some insight on anything cosmic astrological, let me know what that is, and I'll invite Louisa back on, and we'll address that issue. So, as you said, we can rise collectively, can't we? We can do this by pulling ourselves up by our collective bootstraps.
And Tom, I have to say, you know, you're channeling with the music or with the idea of IO. Actually, you know, that's the other big change that's happened for me in the last, you know, 5 years or so, is I look at somebody's birth chart now and I'm not really reading the chart anymore. You know, I start by looking at the planets and think, where am I drawn into? And then all of a sudden I feel this whoosh. And in a blink of an eye, it feels like I've been taken into a portal. It's like, I mean, the room doesn't change, but I see images and ideas. So I'm really channeling birth charts now. It's just the entrance point, you know. So,
well, a bit like the tarot. The tarot just is a set of keys that just kick things off, and then what you do with it when you kicked off is kind of up to you, really. So these
absolutely
are all tools, aren't they?
Yeah, I do. I do sometimes use tarot, you know, if a client wants me to use tarot instead of astrology. Sometimes I mix and match it, but you know, the effect is the same, really. I guess, really, I'm probably better off calling myself a channel these days. So,
fantastic stuff. Well, listen, this will be the first of a few conversations in the Uber Standing thread. I'm going to leave everybody with a bit of music now, inspired by the Planet Suite. And then I'll share the short story IO with you as well, which is a good example of how the planets and the cosmos shape affairs on Earth. In fact, they were instrumental in getting life to Earth and self-awareness to Earth as well. And as we know, Jupiter's a joy bringer. I remember doing my walk the walk, you know, I wrote that first book, and then in the 26-mile walk the walk around London with a bra on, Jupiter was right in my vision for the whole of the 26 miles. It's almost like it was leading me on.
Wow. That's awesome. You know, he changed signs yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah, into the sign of Aries. There's going to be a lot of people taking action in this next year. Like this last brief spell, we've all been kind of dreaming and manifesting in a very sort of like heart space. And it may have been confusing. It's almost like we've been dancing with ideas. Well, now we're in the time of, getting those ideas out there. And we're getting a taste of it now up until around October time. And then it really kicks in, funnily enough, the day before the winter solstice, when Jupiter re-emerges in the sign of Aries, and then it's go, 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 go. It's like the green light. So very exciting.
Well, I think I just got to bring you back for each of the, what's it? So these conversations are timed with the solstice and the equinoxes. That wouldn't be a bad thing, would it?
I'll be very happy to do that with you, Tom. It would be a pleasure.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much again, Louisa. I recommend people get in touch with you, Harley, not just for a bit of first aid, but for this wonderful insight that you can bring into our worlds. Thanks for your Uber standings. And thanks for listening, everybody. And as promised, to save you having to dig them out elsewhere in my extensive Soundwise archive, now follows me channeling Holst, channeling the planets, an ambient music piece from the Soul Waves Insertion album. And after that, me channeling Io, the moon of Jupiter, in the 10th story, the 10th insertion from Book of the Same Names. So enjoy. And as we said in the interview, if you've got anything you'd like me to explore with Louisa in the future, or as somebody walking the path of overstanding with me, and with Siri, if you'd like to come on and share some Uber standings with me, just let me know too. Thank you.
Insertion 10, IO. Councillor 10, like all other councillors, and especially Councillor 5, favoured his insertions being in plain sight, yet as being unrecognisable. His brief was to seed Universe 7 with Level 10 awareness. Levels, by the way, are comparative. So a typical Epoch 5 human has, on average, 7 levels, and a councillor has 13. 11 of the councillors did not know that Septima, Councillor 7, was a level 15 awareness. Even Septima forgot this from time to time, as happens when you get surrounded by others operating differently. Now and again, a lower level intelligence spots something out of the ordinary, or previously unseen, which gives a clue that strings have been pulled from elsewhere. Being able to tune into soul waves helps in this regard. Back as far as 364 BCE, the Chinese astronomer Gan Dei allegedly spotted one of Jupiter's moons, probably Ganymede. Then, in 1610, four of the most massive of the moons were independently discovered by Galileo Galilei and simultaneously by the lesser-known German astronomer Simon Marius. 13 more moons had been detected from Earth by the time the Voyager space probes flew by in 1979. The Voyagers detected 3 smaller inner moons as they flew onwards to the outer solar system. They also spotted that detritus from these moons had generated a ring of dust around the massive nearly star. By the time all life on Earth and the Epoch 5 experiment was terminated in 2109, the number of moons detected was well over 100, and 4 ring systems had been discovered in the orbit of Jupiter. Ever since humans looked up at the night sky and wondered if they were alone, Jupiter had caught their eye. For some, Jupiter caught their third eye, and they attributed godlike status to the wandering star, as planets were referred to in those times. The ancient Greeks named it Zeus, and for the Romans, Jove was the god of the skies and thunder. Gustav Holst called it the bringer of jollity when he composed the planet suite. This brought a smile to Councillor 10, not that he had a face or a mouth. It was just a smile as a concept, as Holst had perhaps unwittingly tuned in to the real essence of Jupiter as a level 10 awareness. Like all planets and stars, its dense core was a tiny black hole connected directly to the void. Everything we see in the known universe possesses this first and base level awareness. The second level awareness is memory, both past and future, of the karmic path. In a gas giant, this is largely held in the vast clouds and vortices beneath the surface. The third level is the face Jupiter showed to the world. The Joybringer rotated on its axis every 10 hours, hoping that someone on Earth would see this as a clue that it had 10 levels of awareness. Most of the time, its upper atmosphere displayed 10 bands too. It was the vortices of the upper atmosphere with which Jupiter expressed its fourth level of awareness. Through its great spots, most noticeably the red one, it could both beam energy out into the universe and also see far into space. The councillors had used the red spot in the vaporization of Lemu at the end of Epoch 3. It was from the conglomeration of these fourth-level displays of awareness whereby Jupiter informed the universe that it was fully conscious. Jupiter was broadcasting its fifth level of awareness to anyone who was really looking. The upper cloud structure was a visible sign of how Jupiter was feeling inside about what it observed outside. The occupants of the inner rocky planets of Lemu, Mars and Earth never knew of the planet's role as their physical protector and spiritual guide. When affairs on the inner planets were tumultuous, so were the clouds of Jupiter. When war and strife abated, so did the jet streams. The four rings and many of the outer moons of Jupiter were quite literally its sixth sense. Just like the hairs on the back of our neck, the rings would jangle and the moons wobble on their axes if the space weather was overly energetic. These alarm bells would inform the core to increase the magnetosphere to protect the planet and the moons it was shepherding accordingly. Epoch 5 humans were well aware that the sphere of electromagnetic radiation they started broadcasting in the early 20th century, travelling at light speed, might alert alien life to their existence. Shortly after the densification of the solar system, the councillors had put the level 10 awareness of Jupiter in place, both as joybringer and guardian. Many other star systems had a similar watchman, and they all gave each other updates from time to time on how everything was going with the planets they were nursemaiding. So Jupiter's seventh sense was its ability to beam out and receive radio waves. Humans had actually detected this output and named the radio bursts. They were called decametric, as the wavelength of the radio bursts were in the tens of meters. The clues were there for anyone who was paying attention. Humans had no idea that Jupiter could detect as well as emit these bursts. They had no idea either that the receiving mechanism relied on the eighth sense bestowed on Jupiter by the four large moons of Ganymede, Callisto, Europa, and Io. In the same way we can sense the direction of a sound, by which ear detects it first, these moons gave Jupiter an idea of which other nursemaid planet was talking. They acted as an interferometer and a differential tuning fork. As they orbited the planet, each of them would receive the incoming signals at a slightly different time. This allowed Jupiter to pinpoint which star system had sent the message to an amazing degree of accuracy. Each of the moons also had a different resonant frequency, which gave Jupiter a sense of the severity of the message. Most of the time, they were messages of joy, though, as the seeds of life took hold on more and more inner rocky planets. Jupiter thought it was probably alone in this galaxy, though, at reporting the trials and tribulations of looking after a planet harbouring sentient life. Jupiter was also the only level 10 intelligence on its side of the galaxy. Most of the other nursemaid planets operated at level 9. The only other level 10 intelligence was hidden by the galactic centre and was busy managing affairs on Aqua 9. It too knew nothing of Jupiter. As it happened, it was the ninth level of intelligence of Jupiter that led to the seeding of sentience in its solar system in the first place. The volcanic moon Io was a neuron factory. In fact, in its centre was a huge self-aware brain that led Jupiter to having its 10 full levels of awareness. Io's brain was not only aware of itself and its role, but it was in direct communication with Councillor 10, and it kept all of Jupiter's other 9 levels informed and in check. Through its vents, it spewed piles of its own neurons out towards the inner rocky planets, just as replicating life on each planet needed to acquire the next wave of senses. Lemu was the nearest and first planet where life became aware. Io helped multicellular but brainless organisms, like sponges, to leave the seabed and evolve into jellyfish by the acquisition of the senses of direction and taste. Such primitive brains were self-evolving, and this led to an explosion in biodiversity. Around the time of the division of the sexes, neurons migrated away from the brain to other centres. It was vital life had a sense of danger, a knowing of where to find food, and eventually the ability to love and to nurture their offspring. This required Io to spew a different class of neurons towards Lemu. Io intuitively knew when it was time for hominids to gain self-awareness, first on Lemu, then on Mars, and finally on Earth. It was only on 3 occasions that it spewed out a mass of glial cells. These cells have only one function, and that's to connect neurons to other neurons, so that brain size is only limited by the cranial cavity. It would always be lost on humans that cetaceans and elephants had larger brains than they did, and that their consciousness might be at a different yet unrecognizable level than theirs. Jupiter's role in conferring level 7 awareness to other planets in its system brought it great pride and joy. This joy was the essence of its 10th level of awareness. The planet knew its role and fulfilled it with passion. When a group of humans finally left the solar system in 2109, Jupiter gave these sentiences one final gift by way of a massive gravitational slingshot boost. Jupiter knew that they were off on a mission to find life on the other side of the galaxy, although the 6 humans were unconscious at the time. After the pulse hit, Jupiter's role would be to nurture a new breed of Martians and to help them gain level 8 awareness and beyond. Jupiter is smiling now, basking in the joy that you have brought to it by reading these words. You can bring Jupiter even more joy the next time you see a bright star after Venus has set, and if you wonder if it is Jupiter. Then, as you admire its brilliance and yellowness, that you might think that it is winking back at you. In passing, I must thank Noma for all of this information. As she told me in the last chapter, this chapter would not be one I had previously entitled or had planned. It just arrived as a complete knowing.